Chapter 2. Visages, Nerth, 5 weeks later. They retired and spent the last of the summer at Visages, playing bones and other games, sitting out in the heat. Some of the men rode servitors off into the veldt and hunted big game, while others broke the local livestock and raced them up and down in the dust. Visages was simply their name for it, officially called CR-345, or Telcat in the local dialect. It was a cluster of dwellings in a northern wadi, where the ground was littered with broken diorite heads. Some were as large as tank wheels, others as small as beads. No one knew who had carved the faces, or why they had done so in so many contrasting scales, or why the sculptures had been smashed and the heads alone scattered as spoil. Nor did anyone care. There was wine, sent as a reward for their pains by Namatjira, and peck in bountiful quantities, courtesy of the same source. They diced and raced and gambled, played spheristiki, laughed out their pain, and swam in the warm blue pools hidden in the cliff-face caves. Sonica's hand healed. Field surgeons had cut back the wound and packed it with basal sensors and motor plugs so that it could later accept a machine graft. He flexed it every day and sensed fingers that had been and would be again, interim phantom fingers. There was a rumour that the Nerth War was ending, and they would soon make shift for a new zone. Sonica didn't believe it. He sat around in the Visages' billet with Dimitar Shiban, a Trinacrian-born het who had been injured in the same week as Peto. The flesh of Shiban's chest and neck was swollen and knotty with buried shrapnel. Like Sonica, he owned a deep hatred of the Nerthine's weaponized magic.
"I have been dreaming lately," he said one day, as they sat around on an awning-covered terrace. "In my dreams I hear a verse."
They had each sniffed a pinch of peck from the gold boxes around their necks, and Sonica was pouring wine from a gombrunware ewer. "A verse, huh?" asked Sonica.
"I'll tell you how it goes, shall I?"
"You remember it, then?"
"Don't you remember your dreams, word for word?" Shiban asked.
Sonica thought about it, then shook his head with a smile. "Never," he said. Shiban shrugged.
"Fancy that," he said.
"This verse," Sonica prompted, sitting back to sip his wine.
"That, oh, it goes... From the hag and hungry goblin that into rags would rend ye, and the spirit that stands by the naked man in the Book of Moons, defend ye."
Shiban broke into laughter as soon as he had finished his rendition. Sonica looked at him.
"I know that," he said.
"You do," chuckled Shiban. "Really?"
"My mother used to sing it to me when I was a boy. She called it the Bedlam Song. There were other verses that I now forget."
"Really? What does it mean?"
Sonica shrugged.
"I have no idea."
Shiban's company was coded the Clowns, and their banner was a howling skull clad in white and rouge vaudevillian grease paint. Shiban had been hurt by a Nerthine splinter bomb during a wadi fight east of Tel Yutan, and he'd been obliged to leave the Clowns under the field command of his head Bashaw, a man Sonica came to know as Fugging Strabo. As in,
"I hope that Fugging Strabo is keeping his head,"
and
"Beloved Terror, let Fugging Strabo not be getting my poor boys killed."
"You worry too much, Dimmy," Sonica told him.
"Oh, so you'd be happy leaving your troop in the hands of your Bashaws, would you?"
Sonica empathised. Due to the bad mauling the dancers had taken, the entire company had been retired to Visages, injured and healthy alike.
Shiban, however, had been sent north with 30 or so wounded of his clowns, the rest of the company deemed intact enough to continue operations. Sonika wondered how he would have felt if he'd been forced to leave the dancers with Lon. He trusted Lon with his life, Shah and Attix too, all the dancer Bashaws. Still, he appreciated Shiban's edginess. They were sitting feet up under the awning in the late sun of an endless afternoon. They were playing the head game, a pastime of their own devising. A man ran up the dusty slope towards them, a clown, stripped to the waist, red-faced and sweating from too much exertion in the sun. He saluted in front of the two reclining officers.
"Sirs!"
"Hello, Jed," said Shiban.
"Let's see it."
The clown, Jed, held out a diorite head. It was chipped and incomplete, about the size of a grapefruit. Sonika really missed grapefruit. Shiban looked at Sonika. Sonika raised a considering eyebrow.
"Put it in place, Jed," Shiban invited.
The clown walked across the hot sand in front of the awning, panting hard and bent down over the line of heads laid out in the sun. They were arranged in graduating size, seed and pea-sized at one end, fist and apple-sized at the other. The head Jed had brought was clearly the largest. He set it down triumphantly at the end of the row.
"Point, clowns," said Shiban.
Sonika nodded graciously.
"Get a cup, Jed,"
said Shiban, and the clown ran off eagerly to help himself to the cold wine on the stand behind them. Shiban took a pinch from his gold box, sniffed, and sat back. He sighed.
"The low's good," he said, "but I miss the combat fix."
Sonika nodded. Shiban had a face like a monkey, with a long brow, a long upper lip, and a button nose. His tanned forehead was high, and his long white hair poured down off the back of his head like a cascade. The shrapnel bumps covering his throat and chest were the sort of thing a man couldn't ignore. The warty mass was quite fascinating. The medics had drained and lanced some of them, but the rest, they had advised, would work out in time. He looked like he had a goiter of blisters. As he had told it to Sonika, Shiban had surprised a Nerthine war party in the business of planting bombs. During the firefight that had resulted, the Nerthine had set the bombs off, killing themselves and wounding Shiban and his men. Some of that shrapnel was organic. Some of it was Nerthine bone.
"I hear there's fighting at Mon Lo," Shiban said.
"I heard that too," said Sonika. Another man ran up. It was Olmed, a dancer. He held out the head he was carrying. "Place it," said Sonika. Olmed took it to the line. His diorite head was bigger than any of them, except the one the clown had just placed.
"Adjudication," Shiban called.
The Munitorum aide emerged from the cool gloom of the doorway in the terracotta building behind them, a long-suffering look on his face. The hetman had been calling him outside all afternoon. This time he brought the digital measure without being told.
"Again with this, sirs?" he asked.
Shiban waggled his fingers at the row of heads.
"My dear friend, we value your impartial judgment."
The aide trudged out into the sunlight and applied the measure to the heads while Olmed stood, breathing hard, watching, his torso gleaming with sweat. The aide straightened up and turned to face the hetman, reclining side by side in the shade.
"Oh, don't keep us in suspense," Sonika said.
"The head is smaller by 8 microns than the head at the line end," the aide sighed, "but it is larger by 2 microns than the one behind it."
Olmed punched the air and did a little victory dance. Shiban tutted. Sonika grinned.
"Point dancers," he said. "Olmed, do the honours."
Olmed nestled his diorite head into position at the head of the line, picked up the head Jed had brought, and threw it with all his strength out into the open field below them, where it was immediately lost again amongst millions of its kind.
"Help yourself to a cup," Sonika told Olmed. He glanced at Shiban. "Sundown in, what, 80 minutes?
"Everything's still to play for," Shiban replied confidently.
"I think," said a voice from behind them, "you have far too much time on your hands."
Sonika leapt up from his canvas recliner. Her Tardo Bronzy stood in the shadow of the awning, smiling at him.
"Hurt you, old bastard," Sonika cried, embracing his friend. "What the hell are you doing here?"
"A matter of 20 crowns and interest growing," Bronzy replied, grinning.
"This is Dimmy Shiban,"
Sonika laughed, gesturing across at his companion, who was rising to his feet.
"I know Dimmy Shiban," Bronzy said, embracing the clown Het and slapping his back. "Xantium, eh?"
"I seem to recall you being there," said Shiban. "How you doing, you fat fugger?"
"Well, well."
"Have some wine," Sonika offered.
"Oh, all right," Bronzy replied.
His armour was caked in dust. He yanked off his cape and his webbing and sat down.
"So, this game, it has rules?"
"Many, many rules," said Shiban.
"And there's money at stake?"
"Money and wine," said Sonika, pouring a glass for his old friend.
"Two teams," said Shiban. "Clowns and dancers, 5 men each side. They scour the fields and bring back heads. The heads go in a line, by size. Retrievers win a cup of wine for each head. Incentive, you see. Sundown ends the game. Team with the largest head in the row wins."
"So just get your boys to roll in one of those big buggers," Bronzy said, pointing at the boulder-sized heads resting in the sand 100 metres away. "Game over."
"Ah, but this is a game of finesse," Sonika said.
"Really?"
Bronzy smiled, sipping from his wine cup.
Shiban nodded. "If a team brings in a head that is demonstrably smaller than the largest, but larger than the next in line, the larger head gets thrown out."
A very broad grin spread across Bronzy's face.
"A game of finesse indeed. Who's winning?"
"I am," said Sonika.
Bronzy took out his purse.
4 crowns on Shiban by sundown," he said.
Sonika won that day's head game in the very last minutes before dark, when Bashor Lon casually wandered in with a head that displaced the clown's latest triumph. Lon bent his back and cast the clown's usurped head back out into the field, where it had been found. Bronzy lost his 4 crowns. According to the rules of the game, Shiban bought wine for both teams.
"So what are you really doing here, Hurt?" Sonika asked later on.
"Let me see that hand of yours,"
Bronzy replied, and studied Sonika's wound as it was displayed.
You'll be good."
"Hurtado, I asked you a question."
"I got a furlough,"
Bronzy said, sitting back in the still of the evening. The air went cold very suddenly after dark on Nerth, closing in like lapping black water. They huddled in around the lamps and the peat-fired heaters.
5 day pass, signed by Uxor Honan herself. Just wanted to come check on you."
"That's not it," said Sonika.
"Why is that not it?"
Sonika smiled and waved to Lon to bring them a fresh bottle.
"Since when did Hurtado Bronzy not have a secret agenda, huh?"
"You wound me, Petto. You wound me. Can't I come here selflessly to look up an old friend and inquire of his welfare?"
Sonika stared at him, a wry smile on his face, waiting for the punchline.
"All right," Bronzy admitted. "There was something else."
"Excuse me, Het," a voice cut in.
They looked up. A Munitorum aide, the very same aide whose time and patience they had abused so thoroughly during the afternoon's game, was standing beside them.
"Yes?" asked Sonica.
"The staff medicae apologizes for this interruption, sir. There is a dead dancer she would like you to identify."
Kazovac had brought the corpse to the cold store at the far end of the visitors' camp. The cold store was a long mud brick building throbbing with refrigeration units. Sonica and Bronzy wandered up in the chilly dark, aware of the stars draping overhead like dust on a desert shawl. The frozen, stiff bodies of Gino dead were piled up inside like firewood. Each one was wrapped in a plastic shroud. Pairs of bare, pallid feet stuck out of the ends of the stacked shrouds, decorated with toe-tag labels. The Hets walked in past them, ignoring the gross stink of embalming chemicals. The corpse in question was waiting for them in the next room. Not yet preserved, it was laid out on a stainless steel gurney, with drip trays slotted in to catch the noxious seep. It had been dead in the desert for several weeks, and it had bloated. The face was lost in one raw, black graze. The uniform frayed and faded, the torso limp and slack where gut gas had previously bloated it. Sonica and Bronzy stood in the chilly light and shivered as they regarded it.
"That's no dancer I know," said Sonica. His words made smoke in the sub-zero air.
"Oh, but he's certainly one of yours, Het," the staff medicae insisted. Medicae Ida was a tall woman, wearing a long surgical gown, the apron front of which was smeared with stains. She'd been a combat Uxor in her youth, but age and experience had seen her graduate to the medicae branch as her perceptive skills dulled.
Bronzy wondered if Ida missed her Uxorhood, missed her command of Geno men. It seemed so, from her tone. "He's not," Sonica insisted, peering down at the corpse.
"Well, I don't know how you can tell that, sir," Ida said. "His face is missing."
"He'd know," said Bronzy.
"Where was he found?" Sonica asked, placing a hand on the corpse's wax-cold shoulder. A surgical cloth had been spread over the abdomen to obscure the ravages of the autopsy.
"The Telyutan Wadi," Medicae
Ida replied. Sonica shook his head.
"He's not one of mine. I'm not missing anyone. The lists were in weeks ago."
"But he's wearing dancer insignia," Ida insisted. "Here, the collar pins, and here, the brooch," she pointed. "He is dressed as a dancer."
"Have you tissue mapped him?" Sonica asked.
"Not yet," Ida admitted.
"Then you'll see the truth. This isn't one of my men."
Senior Medicae Ida sighed. "I know that, Het. I just wanted to confirm it before I..."
"Before you what?" Bronzy demanded.
"Before I alert the Chilead Uxors. Hetman Sonica, is there any reason you can think of why one of your men would have no heart?"
"What?"
"No heart," Ida repeated emphatically.
"What the fuck did he have in there then?"
Bronzy asked, nodding at the corpse's covered chest.
"A cadmium centrifuge," replied Senior Medicae Ida gently. "The subject has undergone some extreme and non-standard organ modification. His liver was... well, I've never seen anything like it."
"What is going on here?" asked Sonica.
"I don't know," Ida replied. "I was hoping you might." "There's something else," she added.
She pulled back the surgical cloth. For a moment, all they could see was the scissor-snapped sternum and the splayed ribs caked black with blood.
"Here," she said, pointing.
On the dead flesh of the corpse's hip, there was a small brand, partially obliterated by a shrapnel puncture.
"What is that?" asked Sonica, squinting at it. "Is that a snake?" Maybe, said Bronzy, bending down to look for himself. A snake or some kind of reptile.
Sonika told the Medicaid to place a guard on the corpse and send someone to wake up the post commander. He went back outside with Bronzy.
Insurgent? Sonika asked.
Bronzy nodded.
Has to be. That mark.
Sonika didn't reply. Crocodilia and other forms of aggressive reptile were the most persistently recurring of all Nerthine emblems.
Have they the art to change a man inside like that?
Bronzy asked. I don't know, Sonika replied, but since that night outside Tel Yutan, I could believe them capable of anything. Bronzy wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Listen, Peto, the reason I came here today, it's about that night. I wanted you to know that I didn't hang you out to dry.
I never thought you did hurt.
Really, though, I was all for taking a force out to support you. I was warned off.
I can imagine, said Sonika.
Bronzy looked at him strangely.
What does that mean?
Sonika walked a few steps away and stared out into the great bowl of the moonlit desert. Sky and land alike, both dark, had a sheen across them, a haze produced by airborne dust. My men were used as a tactical sacrifice to break Tel Yutan open. Lon and a few others know, but I've told them to stay tight-lipped. I've kept the information quiet for reasons of morale.
How do you know this? Asked Bronzy.
Because the men who sacrificed us told me to my face, said Sonika.
And me, Bronzy replied. You saw them then, the specialists.
The Alpha Legion, said Sonika. He looked at Bronzy. So many stories over the years, and then to meet them. The most secret and cunning of all the Astartes.
I was this close to him, Bronzy said, as close as I am to you. He warned me off and told me why, and then told me to keep my mouth shut about the whole thing.
Who?
Alpharius.
Sonika smiled. They were all called Alpharius, Hurt. Bronzy shook his head.
This was the Primarch, Peto. I swear it. I saw his face.
I believe you, said Sonika.
Terror, but what kind of war are we fighting here?
A war of lies and disguise and dissembling, Bronzy answered. Why else would that legion be involved?
I'm not entirely sure of the significance, said Kozlov, the post commander.
He was a brigadier in one of the Crimean support regiments, charged with running the campaign's rear party operations.
Neither are we, said Bronzy. But the fact remains that we have the body of an unidentified combatant showing signs of non-standard anatomical work and a brand mark like a reptile.
We know that subversive and covert tactics are being employed in this zone, said Sonika.
How do you know that? Asked Kozlov.
That's classified, Bronzy said carefully.
If the Nerthine have infiltrated our companies, High Command needs to know about it, Sonika went on. The body needs to be examined so that others like it can be identified. This could break the war, man. This could be one of the key reasons those devils have us on the back foot all the time.
Kozlov took a deep breath and stood up behind his camp desk. The habitant was sparsely equipped and lit only by a pair of lumen packs.
Far be it from me to argue with two frontline heads, he said. What do we do?
Sonika and Bronzy agreed that Honan Mu was the first point of contact. If infiltration was widespread, they had to tread carefully. They had to start with someone they knew they could trust, someone, as Bronzy pointed out, who had dealt with the specialists and therefore understood the gravity of the matter. Kozlov granted them access to the Visage's post's main vox transmitter and personally activated the command-grade cryptogrammics using a biometric key he carried around his wrist.
The channel is secure,
he told them, and left the chamber. Bronzy picked up the speaker horn and threw the transmit switch.
CR-23, this is Joker Lord, broadcasting in encrypt. Stop.
The Vox speaker emitted a series of dull, metallic clicks and then settled into a deep background hiss. Bronzy repeated his signal. 10 seconds passed and then the answer came.
Joker Lord, this is CR-23 reading you encrypted. Stop.
The voice was cold and clear, as if the speaker was standing in the next room. Apart from a slight trebly quality caused by the cryptogramic coding, they couldn't have asked for a stronger, purer link.
CR-23, I need to speak to Uxor Mu urgently. Code Janibeg 5. Stop.
Confirm code, please. Stop.
The Vox answered him. The connection was so clean, the words sounded as if they were polished.
Confirm code Janibeg 5. Stop.
One moment, Joker Lord. Stop.
Another wait. 2 minutes of liquid hiss this time. Bronzy glanced at Sonica.
Joker Lord, this is Honan. Bronzy, this had better not be one of your entertainments. Stop.
The tone was sharpened by the digital overlay of the cryptogramics, but there was no mistaking Honan Mu's spiky attitude.
It's not, Uxor. Trust me and listen. I've got a body here. I'm pretty convinced it's a Nerthine infiltrator, surgically altered. I think we've been compromised. Requesting your advice. Stop.
A pause.
Give me more information to work with, Bronzy. Stop.
Uxor, I think this stiff needs to be examined by tech adepts. A full workup. We could be looking at a huge security breach. I'm thinking maybe to scare up a lifter to my position and I'll babysit the specimen up to the fleet. Stop.
Stand by, Joker Lord. Stop.
Bronzy lowered the speaker horn.
She's wary, he said.
Can you blame her, Hurt? Sonica asked. The number of pranks you've pulled over the years. They were both beginning to sweat, despite the night chill. The massive Voxcaster rig kicked out a fug of heat exhaust, and the air in the chamber was close. They waited for over 5 minutes, so long that Sonica began to pace. Then the Vox cycled up again.
Joker Lord, this is CR-23. Respond. Stop.
Bronzy picked up the horn and waited until all 5 green lights on the console had relit, indicating full-strength cryptogramics.
CR-23, this is Joker Lord. Stop.
What is your position, Bronzy? Stop.
CR-345, Uxor. Stop.
Listen to me, Bronzy. I can't risk an air extraction from where you are. There are some details I can't go into, even via encrypt. Suggest you get transport and move fast and light. I'm checking the charts now. Yes, leave Tel Cat and head west along the Sarmac Trail. If you don't mess around, you should be able to get to CR-8291 by dawn. I'll divert a cavalry squadron to pick you up there and escort you in. Did you get all that? Stop.
Bronzy nodded, even though she couldn't see him.
Understood, Uxor. Stop.
Is this workable, Bronzy? Stop.
Absolutely. Stop, Bronzy replied.
The link leaked out an ambient hiss for a moment.
CR-23, Bronzy, I need you to tell me who knows about this. Stop.
Say again, stop.
Who knows the details of this incident, Het? Stop.
Bronzy frowned.
Me? The post commander, the duty medicae, maybe a couple of staffers? Stop.
Understood. Thank you. I'm sorry, Bronzy, but we need to keep this close for now. Are you ready to move? Stop.
Yes, Uxor. Joker Lord, out.
The lights went out, and the hissing died away.
Bronzy threw the Voxcaster's power down switches and got up.
All right, then, he said.
Why didn't you mention me? Sonica asked.
What?
When she asked who knew, why didn't you mention my name?
Because you're staying here, Bronzy told him.
Bronzy had a few words with Kozlov, and a pair of Crimean non-combatants were sent to bring a transport up from the hard standing behind the main dwelling cluster of visages. Then Bronzy strode off to the billet he'd been given. Sonica followed him. What do you mean I'm staying here? Sonica asked, as Bronzy quickly repacked his haversack.
Don't start.
Bronzy? There was a warning tone in Sonica's inflection. Bronzy stopped what he was doing and looked around at his old friend.
Was it just me? Or did Moo sound seriously weird?
She was just being wary. I said that. Bronzy shook his head.
Something's up. I need you to be my joker, Petto.
What?
My ace in the hole. If anything goes wrong, you'll still know what I know. That's why you're staying here.
Nothing's going to go wrong, said Sonica. Bronzy laughed.
How many years have we been soldiers, Petto?
Enough to know that covering your arse is never a waste of time, Sonica replied. He shook his head. We're worrying about nothing.
No, said Bronzy. We found ourselves in a war of lies, disguise and dissembling. We're worrying about everything.
Sonica didn't look convinced.
Come on, Bronzy rumbled. That's why the Geno 52 has survived this long. We fight smart. We always have. Brains have got us out of more scrapes than balls.
In your case, I'd hardly trust either. Bronzy winked. He wasn't going to rise to the bait. He lashed up his haversack and swung it onto his shoulder. Don't go alone, Sonica said.
I won't. I'll take Dimmy Shiban with me. I can trust him, and he knows how to handle himself if there's an outbreak of stupid.
Good. All right.
Let's be off then, said Bronzy.
The transport Kozlov provided was a scarab pattern carrier, a medium-sized armoured speeder with a troop hold for stowage and a stern-mounted auto-turret. Its long, gently curved hull had been sprayed in a desert tan, but as it slid towards them out of the night on its powerful suspension fields, it looked like a desert phantom, cold and moonlight blue. The delivery crew dismounted, leaving the engines running. Medike Ida loaded the wrapped body into the hold and made it secure.
I can provide a driver, Kozlov offered.
No need, Bronzy replied, tossing his haversack in through the open hold hatch. I can handle one of these babies.
You're infantry, Kozlov said.
I'm a Renaissance man, Bronzy replied. There are few things in this galaxy I can't turn my hand to.
And entirely mess up, Sonica said. Shiban ran up to join them out of the cold darkness. He was lugging a pack and a twin-barreled Laz carbine.
What's this about? He asked.
I'll tell you once we're moving, Bronzy said. All secure, Doc?
Medike Ida jumped down from the hold and sealed the hatch behind her.
I've secured it in ice blocks, but it will deteriorate. Get it into stasis as quickly as you can.
The organs?
Individually packed in vacuum-sealed bags in the hopper under the gurney.
Thanks, Doc, Bronzy smiled.
Shiban was already climbing aboard through the cabin hatch. Bronzy looked back at Sonica.
I hate goodbyes, he said. So, fuck off.
Sonica laughed. Bronzy turned away and then swung back round to face Sonica. His face was solemn.
Look, Petto, there is one thing. One thing I just want to say.
What is it, Hurt? Bronzy looked him in the eyes, all seriousness.
Petto, have you got that money you owe me?
The speeder kicked up dust like a gauzy bridal train and slipped away into the cold desert night.
Kozlov, Ida, and the non-combatants turned away and walked back into the post. Sonika stood out in the chilly darkness under the enveloping cloak of the sky and watched until all traces of the speeder had vanished into the endless black. They ran the Scarab into the west, along the old trail, using only Auspex and the low-light viewers wired to the dashboard. The viewers showed the world like a green moonscape, but they had only a 110-degree forward spread, so when Bronzy or Shiban turned their heads too far left or right, the ghostly view vanished in a wash of fizzle and telemetry junk. The Scarab coasted well and made 80 kilometres per hour over the clearest terrain. Bronzy loved grav-effect transports and always tried to secure them for his jokers when dismount assaults were on the cards. He let Shiban drive for the first 3 hours through the tipping point of midnight. The stars came out over the desert rim with a rare magnificence heightened by their viewers.
"You ever going to tell me what this is about?" Shiban asked.
"No," said Bronzy. 3 hours before sunrise, Bronzy took the stick. The world ahead of him was a jumbled, fast-moving path of lime-cast furrows with the occasional emerald crag looming for a moment before it was lost behind them. Shiban sat back, reclining in the shotgun seat, and took a pinch from his box. Then he played with the auto-turret controls, impelling the sense net to target the stern guns at passing rocks and crumbling slopes of sand rock.
"Set it on auto-serve and get some kip, Dimmy," Bronzy suggested.
Shiban yawned and promptly fell asleep, rocking in his leather cradle. Bronzy envied him. It had been years since he'd been able to manage the old Geno trick of crash sleep, the hypno-suggestive shutdown that allowed a man to catch a wink under any circumstances. Bronzy had been trained that way, but the knack had left him. He kept his hand closed around the bucking stick and watched the ghost-green world outside flash by. The sun came up, a slow, terrible firestorm rising from the south. All of the landscape's shadows stretched out, long and painful, and Bronzy took off the viewer. White light filtered in through the cabin's chipped and crazed windows, and he decided to rely on Auspex alone. 20 kilometres now. The cursor on the cab's light map display moved slowly towards its destination. Sonika woke with a start. Nothing special there. The dull afterglow of pain in his hand had woken him that way every morning since he'd arrived at Visages. He sat up on his bunk. Dawn light, already hot and bright, speared in through the gaps around his rattan blind. He'd been having the strangest dream. He'd been playing the head game with Dimmy, and Lon had brought him a good piece. He'd taken the diorite head out of Lon's calloused hands and looked down at it to judge it. The carved face had been Hurtado's. It had grinned up at him.
"Tell me this, Petto," the head had said. "All these broken heads, are any two faces alike, or are they all different?"
"I don't know, Hurt. Get out of my dream."
"It's important. Do they all look the same? Are they all different? Doesn't that matter? Doesn't it?"
Sonika had lobbed the head away into the wide scree field of broken heads. He'd done it with his left hand. His left hand had had fingers and a thumb.
"Fug," Sonika said, coughing. He had dust in his throat. That was par for the course at Visages.
He looked down at his incomplete hand and felt the missing fingers waggle. He had slept naked. He pulled on his breeches, socks and boots and went out into the early light, bare-chested. A hard rind of sun was cresting the edge of the crags. The sky was off-white, like old ivory, and the landscape was a pink wash, broken by hard black shadows bending to evade the sun. It was going to be a hot one. He could already feel the air baking. The local livestock, some of them still saddled from the previous day's racing, wandered free, grazing the patchy grasses. Sonica walked towards the well, rubbing his face with his good hand. He needed a shave. A shave and a grapefruit. The livestock all looked up at the same time. They stared in the same direction, some of them still chewing, and then broke and scattered. Gino Instinct pulled Sonica back into the cold shadows of one of the terracotta huts. He looked around, suddenly very alert. Where were the sentries? The perimeter guard? The overnight patrols? The pink wash of the landscape moved. Semi-visible figures scurried forwards out of the desert rim. Sonica swallowed hard. He turned and ran back through the shaded maze of dwellings towards the post commander's habitent. He wanted to raise the alarm, but he didn't want the enemy to know he'd raised the alarm. Kozlov had a silent signal device that trembled every post resident's wrist cuff. Sonica slipped into the hot darkness of the habitent. Kozlov sat at his camp desk, staring at Sonica in surprise.
"Commander," Sonica whispered, "emergency alert, now!"
Kozlov didn't move. He continued to stare back at Sonica with the same look of mild surprise.
"Commander Kozlov!"
Kozlov's eyes did not follow Sonica as he moved forwards. They continued to stare at the tent flap where Sonica had entered. Kozlov didn't move at all. Sonica threw himself sideways. The falks, swung by the Ekvernurth, concealed behind the inner tent flap, missed the hetman by a matter of centimetres. The blade chocked through the ground sheet into the dirt beneath. Sonica rolled and came up on his feet. The Nurthine yanked his long blade free and charged him.
"Alarm! Alarm!" Sonica began to shout. "Enemy in the camp!"
He dived headlong over the desk to avoid the lunging blade and fell into Kozlov. Kozlov toppled backwards off his seat, his camp table collapsing under Sonica's weight. Blood ebbed slackly out of Kozlov's nose and mouth. He continued to stare in mild surprise at the roof of the tent. Sonica rolled off the still warm corpse and fumbled frantically to release Kozlov's service pistol from its holster. The Nurthine whirled his falk so high it ripped a slit in the tent roof. He swung it down. Sonica threw himself to one side. The descending blade cut clean through Kozlov's left shoulder.
"Alarm!"
Sonica yelled again, diving away. Outside, he heard shouting and the sudden sporadic bark of las weapons. Sonica threw a saddlebag at the advancing Nurthine, and the whispering falks struck it aside. He scrambled backwards, hurling a writing case. The falks splintered it, and a shower of pens, nibs, and blotting patches spilled out. Sonica ducked again, and the falks tore a wide gash in the tent wall. Gino Training took over. As he landed, Sonica groped for a weapon, any weapon, and found a writing quill that had fallen out of the writing case. Sonica seized it, tested its weight automatically, and threw it like a dart, underhand. It embedded itself, nib first, in the Ekvenurth's left cheek. The Nurthine yelped and lurched backwards. Sonica leapt up and grabbed the haft of the falks. He kneed the Nurthine in the groin. Now the bastard really staggered. He howled. His grip on the falks weakened. Sonica tore the weapon out of the Ekvenurth's hands and swung it. The Ekvenurth's head rolled clean off his shoulders in a puff of blood. The body folded up and the head bounced off the ground sheet beside it. Gripping the falks, Sonica strode across the habitent to the master alarm control. He smacked it, and sirens began to wail all across the visage's post. He walked back to Kozlov's body, staked the falk's blade down in the ground, and pulled out the service pistol, a heavy LAS model. Two Nurthine raiders burst in through the habitent mouth, and Sonica shot them both in the face. They walloped over on their backs, their silver plates dotted with droplets of blood. Pandemonium had erupted outside the command tent. The waking Imperial troops, roused by his shots and the blaring sirens, were scrambling to fight off the Nurthine intruders. The dawn air whizzed with gunfire and the swuck of impacting blades. Sonica heard awful wails of pain. With the pistol in his good hand, he went outside into the baking air. A Nerthine ran at him, Falks raised. Sonica blew the man's throat out with a single shot and dropped him on the sand. All around him, Laz carbines rattled on auto. The shouts and yells were deafening. He ran towards the cold store. Bodies littered the ground outside the mud-brick building. Imperial soldiers, mostly half-dressed, sliced into pieces. He went inside and shot down the two Nerthine he found there. One fell forwards against the stacked, frozen bodies in their shrouds and wrenched off his breastplate as he slid down. The breastplate landed in front of Sonica, rattling to a stop. He saw the engraved reed emblems and the snapping crocodilia.
"Get out!" a voice gasped. "Run!"
He turned. Medike Ida stood behind him. She clutched at the falks that stapled her through the chest to the cold store wall. Her gown was soaked in blood. Her own, for the first time.
"Medike!" Sonica yelled.
"Too late for me!"
She wheezed and died. A Nerthine raider burst in behind them, and Sonica spun around, firing a shot that silenced the man forever. More followed. Falks is raised. Sonica began to shoot. By his weapon's digital display, he had 20 shots left. 19. 18. 17. Bronzy brought the scarab to rest and hit the dampers. The sun was up, fierce and bold.
"Wake up,"
he told Shiban as he unstrapped his harness. Shiban groaned. Bronzy jumped down out of the speeder and looked around. His stomach was grumbling. Where the hell was Honan's promised cavalry? The cratered desert spread out all around him in the burning light of the rising sun. He saw a figure toiling up the trail towards him. A tall figure, wobbled by the heat haze. Bronzy waited. 2 minutes. 3. The figure came closer, becoming properly visible. It was a space marine, in full battle plate. The armor was purple, trimmed in silver, with green markings on the immense shoulder plates.
"Great God," Bronzy murmured.
The towering Astartes came to a halt 10 paces from Bronzy and the speeder. Soft red light glowed like embers in its eye slits as it read and targeted him.
"Bronzy, we meet again," the helmet speaker crackled. "Sir?"
The Astartes held its massive bolt gun close against its armored chest.
"I warned you. You really do know how to stir up trouble, don't you, Hurtado?"
Bronzy blinked.
"I don't understand. This is important. This is
none of your business. But you've made it your business, which is a colossal mistake, and a shame, because you're a decent fellow. There's only one option."
"What the fuck are you talking about?"
Bronzy cried, wishing very suddenly he'd brought a weapon with him.
"Back right off, you son of a bitch," Shiban declared, moving out from behind the cover of the hovering tank, his double carbine raised to his shoulder and aimed squarely at the armored figure.
"Dimmy, don't!" Bronzy yelled.
"No one threatens my friends," Shiban growled back. He edged forwards, his weapon fixed steadily on the figure in purple armor.
The Astartes turned its visor slowly to regard Shiban. The soft red ember light flickered in its eye slits. Far too fast for Bronzy to follow, the Astartes wheeled and fired its bolter. Dimitar Shiban, who remembered his dreams word for word, left the ground and exploded as he travelled backwards, showering blood and meat in all directions. His twisted carcass hit the ground and lay still.
"Oh, God! Oh, Terror, no!" Bronzy yelled.
The Astartes switched its aim back to Bronzy. Bronzy sank to his knees in the dust.
"Please," he murmured.
"As I said,"
the Space Marine remarked, stepping forwards, its bolter aimed.
There is only one option.
Why are you doing this? Bronzy pleaded.
For the Emperor, the Astartes replied.